All right, we are live, and welcome back to another episode of the Fix Sports Podcast. For my new viewers, thank you for tuning in. The Fix Sports Podcast is the realest, blackest, and funniest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. And you know, I'm coming straight from the South. We bring it how we do it. Audio shop talk right in your ear hole, brought to you by yours truly. I am Joseph Ward, the host of the Fix Sports Podcast and co-founder of the Freedom Train Network. And that is our home. So make sure you visit our website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Joseph Ward, Patrick Irvin, Shelby Davis, Queen Candace, and Enigma September, all of our podcasters, because we got some of the best podcasting going on this side and either side of the Mississippi. So you definitely have to visit our website to be able to check us out. So for the Fix Sports Podcast, as you know, you can support me on Patreon. So visit patreon.com/thefix. You can contribute as little as $1 a month to help this platform grow and be able to contribute more to my community and affect my community and just the sports media overall, because we're creating our own spaces and we're telling our own stories. So that's why we do what we do. And a quick shout out to our sponsors who are On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants is a online platform that provides the sung and unsung stories of the heroes of the African diaspora, people you normally wouldn't learn about during Black History Month or any other time. And remember, On the Shoulders of Giants is bringing you African history through their book series, their blog, the African History Curriculum app, which is available on their website at www.ontheshoulders1.com. The On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, the On the Shoulders of Giants online course, which is available on Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG, and just virtual classes. There's Corona going on now, so no face-to-face, but virtual classes. So all the African history that you need at your fingertips. All right, so we got a good one today. I'm excited about this one. I love doing research. I love just going through the internet, whether it's social media or just deep diving through Google or whatever, because every time I do that, I always find a gem. And today is that day. I definitely found the gem. I came across an organization called the Black Girls Hockey Club. And so I'm a young black guy from the hood in Tallahassee, Florida, but I actually have been watching hockey since the early 90s. So I'm into the hockey. I know the Stanley Cup playoffs is going on right now. I don't know if the Tampa Bay Lightning won it all last night or not. I have to look that up. But hockey is something I have to give a shout out to my friend Sam Dixie. He's the one who introduced hockey to us. And we were actually the black kids in the hood playing hockey on rollerblades in the middle of the street. So we're no stranger to this. But when I saw a Black Girls Hockey Club, all of my senses went off, all of the alarms went off, because I like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever heard in my life. And today we have a representative of the Black Girls Hockey Club. Her name is Dr. Tunisha Singleton. She's a media psychologist and emerging media marketing and digital communications consultant. She's serving field graduate universities in the Department of Psychology as an adjunct professor. She's turned her attention to tackling her passion in sports, working to boost fan engagement, build community relationships, and plant engaging touch points to fasten and support relationships between sports and hockey. And she's a part of the Black Girl Hockey Club, which is working to bridge the gap between Black women and hockey and the exposure Black women can get in hockey and be able to change the game of hockey. So those are the things that we're going to be learning today. So once again, or just overall, everybody, just get all your energy together, because we have Dr. Tunisha Singleton. Thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Joe. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, no problem. It is definitely a pleasure. The pleasure is all mine, because, you know, you could be doing anything, but you decide to be here with me. So I'm grateful for that. And everything that you and the Black Girls Hockey Club is bringing to the table as a black man, I felt I was obligated to make sure I reach out and support in any way that I can, because I truly believe that if we are not helping us, nobody else will.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yeah. Like we have to take care of ourselves. We have to take care of each other. And it takes a village, you know, and especially right now more than any other time, you know, like we need our allies. We need our Black men. We need our Black women. We need our LGBTQ communities to be able to, you know, to rally with us and try and make some positive change and progression, because what's going on outside is nasty right now.
It's
exhausting, and we can't, you know, Black women, the news, you know, out of this last week about Breonna Taylor and stuff and the lack of justice with that, it's just, it leaves our hearts really, really heavy, you know, this it's such a disservice, and it's disheartening, and it's like, Black women need support. So we need our Black men, we need our allies, we need our community to help us, because we can't bear this burden by ourselves, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, I'm in a mindset, if they mess with one of us, they mess with all of us.
I'm saying, I'm the exact same way. We feel the same. Absolutely. Because, I definitely want to hear some more about this roller skating in the streets.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into it. We're definitely going to get into it, because like I say, it was a time when, and I think about it now, all we were trying to do was just have fun.
Yeah.
We had our favorite hockey players. I was always a Tampa Bay Lightning fan. I had one friend who was a Detroit Red Wings fan, one friend who was a Vancouver Canucks fan. So we all just have our different things going on as far as that. But put our rollerblades on, go out in the street, and just try to do our best. Right. Right. Right.
That's why, like, you feel like sometimes I'm not allowed to have fun if you don't see someone that looks like you doing that.
Right, right.
You know? And that's what I think is really a part of the core of Black Girl Hockey Club, is that we're allowed to have fun too. We're allowed to be hockey fans. We're allowed to go to the games. We're allowed to do these things. Like, make it more welcoming. And I think that's at the core of all of this. You know, how I found it was actually maybe last year. So, like, when we were allowed outside.
Right.
I was going through Twitter, and I've always liked going to hockey games. Like, there's very few things that come close to attending an NHL game live. And I fell in love with the Las Vegas Golden Knights story. I just moved to Las Vegas. Yeah. So, you know, yes. That's my team now. And I was living in Los Angeles still at the time. And so I found out, I was scrolling through Twitter, and I see this Black Girl Hockey Club, and I was like, what? And they were doing a meetup in LA at Staples when VGK was going to Staples Center to play the Kings. And so I was like, done. I'm so going. I'm all in, all the thing. Bought a ticket, bought a shirt, did the things. And so I went to this meetup, and it was the best. I was in awe. So we all, you know, went early so that we could, because Renee, the founder and executive director of this organization, she, you know, coordinates with several of the franchises to give us, you know, an all around just awesome experience. And so we got there early, took group pictures, you know, went on the ice, met Luke Robitaille, like, got to ride, you know, kids got to ride the Zambino, like, stuff like that. And so, but when I showed up early, I saw a group of white men, women, bi, gay, straight, Black, Asian, Latino, veteran, old, young, kids, babies, Canadians. I saw the most beautiful mix of just people that want to have fun, like you said. They just want to enjoy the game, that are supportive of each other, all wearing BGHC gear. And it was the most diverse group of just beautiful people. And I loved that experience. I was like, I'll be damned. Like, I didn't know what to expect, but I was happy and surprised with what I saw and what I got embraced with. So I was like, I'm all in. So got to meet Renee and stuff. And I was like, I'm all in. Like, how do you, what can I do to be a part of this and help? And so blessed and fortunate enough to be on now their board of directors and helping them, you know, formulate everything as they're officially a nonprofit organization, you know, licensed in California. And so it's just amazing. And that's how I, you know, discovered it and came a part of it. And it's just been amazing.
So, but before we go deeper into Black Girls Hockey Club, I want to get more info about you, because I've read about you and you have a unique skill set that you bring to the table. But how did you become a media psychologist? How did you even find interest in that? And how do you bring those skill set to the Black Girls Hockey Club? Mm-hmm.
Well, my background is in traditional entertainment, film and radio, UC Santa Cruz, San Diego State and such, and moved to LA in 2007 and have been living there for like the last dozen years, with the exception of just the summer, just moved to Vegas. Mm-hmm. And with that traditional background, I just didn't like the entertainment industry anymore. I felt it to be a little bit toxic and gross, and I wanted to do something more meaningful. And right. Sports is always something that I was very, very passionate about. Like, I played in college, I played basketball, I grew up, I'm just a fan of sports. Right. And I realized that there was something missing, though, in regards to fan identification and the way and the experiences that different communities have. And I knew it was something far beyond just the tale of the tape or the box score and the game stats. Like, the sport experience is far more, multidimensional and important right. than those listings. And so while I'm mulling over all of this in my head, I just kind of, I don't know what I searched for, but I found media psychology and just a light bulb went off in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yes, this is it. That relationship between ourselves and media as it's evolving, right? So it's not like your traditional communications discipline or your mass communication or your media studies, because we're focused on the psychology aspect of it, which I know you're a big fan of too. That's science. Just like boxing, it's a sweet science. And so it's that learning the meaning that we attribute to these things. Why am I feeling this way? What influence does it have on me? How can I persuade it? And it's so interdisciplinary, because it's not necessarily just sports, but politics, political persuasion, how to make campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
It can be more of the immersive experience, virtual reality and augmented reality. It's also, marketing from a brand storytelling perspective.
Right.
How do you sell? We're all in the people business.
Okay.
We're all selling something, right? If it's not a vote or some toilet paper or some coffee, like, we are all selling something. So how do you communicate that to your consumer? Because we're selling to other people, not robots, right? So people have emotions, people have feelings. And so tap into these emotions and the mental processes and cognitive about how people embrace something, how they become fan of something. That's all psych. And that's what jazzed me and why I got that PhD in media psychology. So I graduated 3 years ago in 2017. And being able to now use that perspective in a nonprofit field and in that space for sports, because it's about looking at the community.
Right.
We're focused on the Black women, Black female, BIPOC community, right? So Black, Indigenous, people of color. What does this community need? How can we benefit and serve this community using not only traditional media or emerging media like digital and stuff, as it was founded literally on Twitter? It was an organic manifestation. It's just something that our founder Renee just organically created because she recognized that there was a need.
Uh-huh.
Part of media psychology, it's innovation, and it doesn't have to be, something MacGyver like, people think that it's just that innovation means just large, grandiose, new inventions and algorithms and stuff. Sometimes innovation is just answering a need.
Yes.
It's creating a solution.
Yes.
That's innovation. And sometimes it's just, you need to take a step back. Look at the current landscape, look at the market that you're looking in. And so for Renee and for Black Girl Hockey Club, it's like, all right, it's the hockey community. What's the problem? Black women are marginalized. We do not feel spoken to. Black people are not welcomed in this community. We are left out of the marketing. We are left out on the ice. We're left out off the ice.
Right.
How can I now fix that? What is the solution? Let me create an organization that empowers and welcomes. If they're just like you said, with they're not gonna, you know, with the how your podcast was created and the way that you know media analysts and commentators in sports, you know, convolute and you don't like the way that they're analyzing things. You know what? Let me just do it myself then. If they're not gonna do it right, I'm gonna do it. I'm not gonna wait for anybody else. So this organization was kind of founded in that same way. If they're not going to talk to me, I'll talk to my damn self and give myself what I need and then recognize that there are others that have this kind of shared experience of like, all right, we're here now. We're going to do this. And then they can follow our lead or whatever. Right. We're going to take care of ourselves and we're going to take care of our community.
Exactly.
And being able to have that psychology background and placing that into here of just looking at the landscape and how to use communication tools and strategies to network and navigate with others. It's a beautiful thing. And that's you know, how I've been able to and continue to try and merge these two fields.
Yeah. And that I love that. But as you were talking, it made me think, what's interesting? How we hear a lot of people talk about how sports bring people together.
Yes.
And if done correctly, sports can bring people together.
100%.
But still yet, I know for Black people, we're still fighting for a place in sports, fighting to be recognized in sports, especially sports that are not considered traditional Black sports.
Right.
Football, basketball, baseball, and baseball is even not considered the traditional Black person sport. It's just, all right, we let y'all play with us. But you know, getting people to understand when it comes to sport, just when it comes to us, period, we could do everything and we can do it at the highest level. And Black, there has been a Black presence in hockey for a while, but I'm not used to the Black women's presence in hockey. Most people are not used to Black women's presence in hockey. And that's one of the reasons for this interview, so we can go more into the Black woman's presence in hockey, because the stories aren't being told. Mm-hmm. The information isn't out there. I don't know anyone who probably ever thought about Black women playing hockey.
Yeah.
And so it's like, all right, well, let's be a part of this change. So, so with that being said, you told us a bit about the inspiration behind Black Girls Hockey Club, but can you go more into explaining overall what you bring to the table as the Black Girls Hockey Club and when was it founded?
For sure. Yeah. So officially the organization has been around for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Renee, our founder and executive director, yes, she founded the organization because, as I said earlier, like kind of recognizing that there is this need and that not only from a fan perspective, but on the ice as well, like, there is just not a lot of representation of Black women specifically in hockey. Mm-hmm. We've even in Los Angeles at the Staples Center, you know, she's given examples of like being called N-word and Black bit, you know, like all this very racist derogatory things. And that's even, you know, as just as a fan. And she too, and a lot of us, we don't know about that history. So we want to be able to start to tell these stories and of the Blake Boldens, you know, of the first Black woman that's in the National Women's Hockey League, you know, and is a scout now for the Los Angeles Kings. So
tell
these stories, right? And so, and I think it's, if we're not kicking the door down and saying like, hey, why aren't we included? Why isn't there a presence and of Black women in this space? Because like you said, we could do everything. People, we are not pigeonholed to just one thing.
Right.
But so many layers to this is like, you know, the psych nerd in us, right? There's if we don't see others doing it, we don't feel like we're, you know, kind of empowered or encouraged to do that.
Exactly.
I saw a beautiful video of a young African boy doing ballet, like barefoot, like in the dirt in Africa. And it was like, oh my God, that's the most Juilliard shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was
beautiful.
You know, and he's like maybe 10 years old or something. But it's that if we can get over some of the stigmas within our own community,
Oh, we could do so much more.
We could do so much. If we got rid of the, like, oh, that looks gay, or oh, that's not manly, or oh, like that, or that's not black, that's a white sport. Well, if we can get rid of those things, if we can start to change those things, then we can start to see more black women and men doing things and breaking down these barriers. And so we have a scholarship program to that effect of trying to offset some of the costs for that the expense of playing hockey, because it's the most expensive sport to play. It's expensive. Yeah. And right. So we understand too, that's another barrier as to probably why, another hurdle or obstacle that stops, that's a problem for black families. And if a kid, you know, is like, hey, I want to play hockey, he's like, well, it's too damn expensive. So we're here, right. We have different tiers of scholarships that we give 3 times a year. To try and offset some of those costs. And we encourage, you know, and it's just for black girls, you know, from 9 to 18. The only requirements is that you be in good academic standing, and you be, you know, so hey, no Fs. You got to do your part, right. Too, you know, right. And you can nominate yourself, or you can have, or you can be nominated. You know, it could be a coach, a parent, a guardian, a friend can nominate someone. You know, it's kind of like gifting them this scholarship opportunity, because if we start to see more black girls, black people, and the black community start to chip away at those stigmas and those layers, then we can see, hopefully, you know, a progression of positive change and seeing more inclusion of us in here, because like you said, representation matters. And so, we need more of the Blake Boldens. We need more of the black women in hockey. And it starts with, you know, our allies have to help. That's why these conversations that we're having as an organization is to invite collaboration and get people involved so we can, okay, what can we do? It's looking at that landscape again and figuring out, like, how can we authentically be included? Because it's when it's warranted, you know, like we never want anything to be gifted, but we know we work hard and it's not enough.
Exactly.
It's never enough, because it's one of those things that I think it's a larger conversation about just our social context right now. And that, you know, a lot of the white community right now, it's like, well, I'm not racist. I don't see this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it doesn't have the of these things isn't like the movies.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily just mean you go around yelling the N-word at folks.
Layers to it.
There's layers to this.
Yes.
So even, you know, by not acknowledging that there are multiple ways that privilege and that how privilege is a part of white supremacy, whether or not it's explicit, or even if it's just implied or just la la la, I'm just not gonna pay attention to it. The result's the same.
Right, but that goes into the privilege of the system of white supremacy being in place, because I don't have to care about that because it doesn't affect me. And that's
people care of for me. I don't even I just have to show up. And I get that's not for us.
Right. And, yeah, we can't take this off.
Yeah. So I think that's part of these conversations that we want to have. And it's, you know, we first and foremost just want to help support black females, black women, black girls, at all levels, youth, minor, pro, college, all of it. Because it starts on and off the ice. If we can get, you know, if we can fix some problems off the ice, it would by nature solve on the ice.
Yes. It definitely translates.
It all seeds. It's all definitely seeded and rooted into each other.
Yeah. I what's cool though is when you mentioned Blake Boldin, I made sure I covered that story here on the Fix Sports Podcast. It was a couple of weeks ago. I ran across a story. I was like, I have to talk about this, because I literally go out of my way. If black women are doing anything in sports, I'm going out of my way to make sure I talk about it, I cover it, because we're serious about using our media for our upliftment and us being able to have our voice. And if people keep saying representation matters, then it really matters. And those of us who are in any way, shape, or form media, we have to make sure that we're using our platforms for ourselves. Because, you know, when I was reading through you all's website and it was talking about being unapologetically Black, I was like, yes, this is going to work out well. Because I just feel like every group of people should be unapologetic about who they are.
Absolutely. And you know who says that perfectly? And it is Ryan Clark. You know, because I'm a big fan of him, you know, having gone into the media side now that he's retired. But he's been so articulate. And one of the few joys left at ESPN.
Yeah, you're right.
He really, really is. Because Marcy was talking about, just be yourself. If you're going to be racist, then be racist. That's fine. I would rather know. Don't lie. So I think they were asking about, it was like on Get Up, you know, that Greeny show in the morning that they do. Mm-hmm. And I think they were talking about, before the season started, they were talking about the NFL season. They were talking about, I think, Jerry Jones. And like, he was going to make a statement about kneeling at the anthem, because he was like the only owner that was being quiet about the whole thing. And so they're like, Jerry, how come Jerry? Jerry always likes talking. Like, where's Jerry? And then he was like, I don't need to hear from Jerry. He was like, I know. I'd rather you be quiet and just not fake something. I would rather know. Be unapologetic about it. If you think, or like Dabo, you know, he's like, no, I think we should play and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, if you believe that, be unapologetic about it.
Be you.
If you want to be, you know, if you're a Trumper, if you're anti-mask, do you. Fine. I would rather know so I don't get caught up later. Be unapologetic about who you are. And we're unapologetically, you know, about Black women and the Black community us. And I encourage everybody to do the same and wear the flag that they need, you know, and that they embrace. Because, I'd rather know. I'm getting too old.
Exactly. Like I tell people all the time, I'm from the South. I'm from the Bible Belt. I grew up in a city, literally, where every other year the Ku Klux Klan would march, would have a protest and march down the street. So we grew up seeing this stuff. I like my racism raw and uncut. Be real about who you are. Don't hide it, because but also, What I like having that understanding of psychology with that. So seeing how racism affects the psyche of our people, and then putting two and two together, like, okay, there's a reason for us to exist. There's a reason for the Black Girls Hockey Club to exist, because you get to affect the psyche of a whole lot of Black women and a whole lot of women, period. So especially those who say they're allies, you get to teach them how to really be allies.
Yes. Yes, so. Absolutely. And it's something I didn't even recognize within myself and my own fandom of sports until I was getting my PhD and was trying to learn psychology. Because everyone, I have a lot of friends and allies, you know, white friends that are very, very close to me that will be like, why do you like sports so much? Like, just why? Like, it's toxic, you know, the NCAA, very exploitative, and you're not paying athletes. And that's fair, I get that. But there was like, why do you like sports? I was like, why? And because I always have, like, okay, my sport appointments. I'm like, okay, kickoffs in 90 minutes. Like, I just always,
like me, right?
And then it wasn't until I started studying, like, fandom and identity and commitment. And then I was like, well, shit, it's like, I realized sports is the only space where I can see people who look like me succeed.
Yes.
Regularly.
Yes.
Because when I was like, all right, my PhD, that I went through 22 years of school, right? So that's 12, 4 for undergrad, 2 for master's, 4 more, 22 years, 22 grades I went through.
Right.
Out of those 22 grades, I had 3 Black teachers.
Wow.
Out of 22 years of education. And one wow. was my kindergarten teacher. So I don't know if you want to count that.
Right.
So that's it. And wow. none of that, only one of them, two of them, minus my kindergarten teacher. So I had mm-hmm. Dr. Trisha Rose, who wrote Black Noise. I love this book if you haven't read it. It's my go-to shelf. She was okay. she has her own podcast with Cornel West. So Dr. Trisha Rose, she taught hip hop culture at UC Santa Cruz. Read this book. It's about black rap music and black culture in contemporary America. Fantastic. She was my first black professor. And then the legendary Dr. Angela Davis. She also sat wow. in, yes, at Santa Cruz. So those two and my kindergarten teacher.
Wow.
So in education, not a lot of examples. And at the time and still in political office, government, not a lot of examples.
Right.
In medicine, science, doctors, lawyers, not a lot. We got Johnny Cochran, you know. But so sports and entertainment, black culture, I found more people that's where I can regularly go to see someone succeed that looks like us. So right. that's what I subconsciously realized why sports matters so much to me. Because I was like, oh, yeah, like they're being praised. You know, like this is something I'm not used to seeing a lot. Yeah. Kind of yeah. just the normal, obvious positive and encouragement I would get from my family. Outside of that, you know, I was mm-hmm. like, I'm biased. They're supposed to like me, you know.
Exactly.
That's why representation matters so much. And so for this, it's like the value that's in sports, it's so essential. And it's funny to me, it's kind of ironic rather, that it took the absence of sports in this pandemic.
Right.
To realize how much we needed it.
Right. Right.
To realize how much pressure we want to put on these athletes. It's not new. It's just was forgotten. It was just in timeout or like asleep or something. And now it's being repositioned again to have these larger psych, social, political, cultural conversations. And Black Girl Hockey Club is certainly at the root of that. And I think becoming very transcendent and powerful because we're asking our allies to do work with us. We can't do this by ourselves, and our future is very dependent on it.
Exactly. So now what's interesting though is every school I went to was basically 80 to 90% black, except my middle school's like 50-60% mm-hmm. black. So I was around predominantly black people all of my life, every grade. I was the person who had only a handful of white teachers. But our heroes, the people that we saw succeeding, were still drug dealers and athletes. Those two groups of people, drug dealers and athletes, is who we saw succeeding on a regular basis. The people that we saw with the money, the people that we saw on TV, the people that we saw were respected. So athletes and drug dealers are accessible.
Yes.
And so that's why for me, one of the things to change is, for one, especially using this platform, for one, making sure we get to our community that sports is a means to an end. It's not the end. Yes. But also on a broader scale, getting out into the community and finding the black professionals and bringing them into our community and letting them know, like yourselves, bringing them into the community and say, these kids don't know that you can do media psychology unless they see a media psychologist.
Yes.
So yes. being able to have those lanes open both ways, I feel will definitely help our community, but help us use sports better within our community, because yes. we have found a way to use sports to get out of certain situations for some individuals, but how can we use sports to make a greater impact? That's what I'm always talking about.
Absolutely. And that's something that is part of what I want to do and continue to do professionally mm-hmm. with my background in terms of community management, because it's not just, okay, so we checked in here and then we didn't. No, like this is a long-term thing, and every different region requires different resources.
Right.
Your experience of having, of being in predominantly Black neighborhoods and only, and having like only a few white teachers, flip that. Because in California and Riverside, where I grew up, it was the opposite. My family was considered the Cosbys, right? Okay. We were the only Black family in the neighborhood, went to good schools, and it was mostly white, brown, Black, and very, very few. I think, you know, those class pictures where you got like 30 kids on a face on like one little face. Like, I was always the only little chocolate face out of the 30 kids. So regionally, right? And so we're on different coasts and completely different experiences. So I think a part of community management and the work that we need to do in sports is being able to recognize that these different regions and franchises will require different strategies.
Right.
How to make a positive impact for that demographic, for that community. And then and implementing long-term initiatives to help make a difference in the kids and for youth development. Because I don't hear enough from athletes about equity, owning, sustainable growth. It wasn't until, you know, very recently, I think I would say within like the last maybe 5 years or so, where I'm starting to hear athletes be open and honest about that. You know, like Caron Butler having Jamba Juice franchises, you know, creating wealth or an income outside of the court, off the court, right?
It's so needed.
Very, very needed. I think CC, you know, Chris Carter was always very like, well, these kids don't know how to write a check. These kids don't know what Chapter 12 is. They're 24 years old, you know, and they're already, you know, earrings, rims, whatever, bad influences within their entourages, you know, like very baller style. So a big part of what I want to do professionally, you know, in community management and in sports is being able to implement these types of long-term strategies and really do that work. Because regionally, there are different things that need to happen, and bridging that, strengthening that relationship between sports and society, it's now more than ever, it's very, very necessary, because there are demographics that look like us that are being left out and marginalized, and as a result, emotionally feel like they don't matter, feel like unseen. And I hate seeing that. But when I went to that first Black Girl Hockey Club meetup and I saw, you know, these 7, 8, 9-year-old little Black boys and girls, you know, running around on the Zambino and on the ice, like I just, you know, wanted to cry if I wouldn't hold the beer. Like, this is beautiful, because I could see myself doing that.
Exactly. Because like I said, we grew up in Florida and we don't see ice. So that's why the rollerblades were just so prominent for us. But hearing that, I just know, like, if we were in that area growing up, me and my friends, we would have been there. We would have been there on the ice. We're trying to learn how to skate, or learning how to skate and just having fun. So with that being said, because you mentioned the Black Girls Hockey Club scholarships earlier. So you guys have different scholarships. So what are some of the different scholarships, and what are some of the requirements to be able to earn a scholarship?
Sure. So there's three different tiers of scholarships, and the criteria for all three are the same. It's just, you have to be between 9 and 18 years old and be in good academic standing. And be affiliated with either, you know, your local hockey team within your school, or a different organization, you know, or different league outside of your school, and show and demonstrate that, you know, that there is some type of there's some financial hardship that you need, you know, to, because it, like we said, this is the most expensive sport to play, between the uniform, you know, and nothing is cheap now. I was looking at some of the differences in costs between when I was a kid, you know, in the 90s to now. It's like, my God, I couldn't imagine, you know, having more than one kid that wants to play. You times that, you know, thousands of dollars for just one season. So we have different ranges in the, for what from $5,000 all the way down to like just $500. But we know every little bit helps. And so between these three different scholarships, that's all you really need. Just be, 9 to 18, be in good be in good academic standing, and be affiliated with a hockey organization or some type of team, league, franchise, whether it's in your school or a subsidized, another program. And you can nominate yourself, or you can have somebody nominate you. And so we have an application on our website, blackgirlhockeyclub.org/scholarship, I believe. You can find that there. And then all the application criteria and itself is there. We just have two essay questions that we want the student to answer and not have any, parental help or guardian help with that. Just be authentic about why do you want, what would the scholarship help and mean to you as a Black woman in hockey and at the youth level? Like, how would this help impact you, or what are your thoughts on how we want to start basically having young Black women think about what representation means, you know? We want, so these questions that we're asking within our application, we want our Black women, especially, at this young age, to start to recognize, we're all individuals and we're all people, but you're also a Black woman. And if you don't accept it, then the world will tell you very, very quickly. So what does that mean to you, on the ice as a player? And how can we help support you? Because that's what we really want to do, is we want to support. So our next deadline, I believe, is the end of the year. Our fall scholarship just passed that deadline. So we're actually about to give out our award for the summer. So our fall deadline, I believe, is December 31st. So you can go on the website, find the application, and then just submit it via email. And then the winners for the winter scholarship will come out, I believe, in January. But like I said, we just want to be supportive. And I think by helping offset some of these costs, it would help encourage, young Black girls to get rollerblades like you guys on the street and just start having fun. We want to be able to, everybody can have fun and playing a wonderful game and a fun game, Yeah, I wish I had this when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun game. It's definitely something that more and more I feel our people can get into, can take advantage of, can just enjoy on a regular basis.
You remember the old Chris Rock joke? I think it was from Bigger and Blacker. He was like, wait till they make a heated hockey rink.
Oh yeah.
He's like, you seen LeBron on some skates.
Exactly. What's funny about that is you get a personality in hockey like PK Subban years after that. So it's just funny. But I enjoy seeing it. Like when I found out, you have Hall of Famers like Brent Fuhrer, and just the lineage of the Black people that just been in hockey and have been playing good. So
and these are stories we want to, that need to be told. And it's like, I love, 30 for 30s and stuff. And that one on Ric Flair was dope, but it's like, damn it, can we tell some Willie Reed stories? Like, can we tell some more stories? Like, I know there's more to be told. And so that's, I think, why also I love the diversity within my background and what I'm trying to do here, is because with the production and traditional entertainment, and now with the more psychology and marketing strategy here, it's like I want to start creating more stories.
Yes, that's cool.
I always just say, sports, storytelling, society, that's my jam. Those three things are, that's my jam. And I feel like it's, some folks are doing it well, but there needs to be more. And I think now there's, we can't go outside. There's no
right. Might as well create.
Gotta create. If nobody else is gonna do it, might as well do it ourselves, right?
Right. All right. So, because you all's website has a lot of good stuff on it. So I came across the education section. So you guys are informing people about different aspects of hockey, different aspects of sports and things. Now, could you give me and my listeners a bit more information on the type of education and why you all feel like, let's give our education from this website. Let's teach people certain things? Like, what's the why behind that?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of relearning that people are doing right now, obviously, with given the downtime and stuff. But even beyond that, we want to be a service to our community, and that community includes allies and learning what allyship is and how we can do that. And there's a lot of what some have called trauma porn, you know, going on.
Yeah. On social media.
It's just like constantly black plight, black struggle. And it's just like, oh my God, like it's, it can be overwhelming and it's very, very exhausting. So education doesn't necessarily just mean, okay, here's a history of black players in hockey. Okay, here's some Spike Lee movies, go watch it. Okay, yeah. Like we want education to me is much more broad than that, and it can be much more personal. So some of the other education resources that we'll put out there, some of them are just wellness based.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are self-care, right? For black women. And we know that, you know, black women caring for themselves is a radical act, right? So Renee and our organization have been trying to put out more virtual events since everything is remote right now, to help provide just other services for in other areas of how we can take care of ourselves in at home. So we had a nice virtual event that was all about like just radical self-care for our community, right? And so going from even breathing techniques to cooking to yoga to, you know, just overall wellness and health, things like that. We even had, you know, like Juneteenth virtual event where we had Soraya Tinker on, and where these are more educational based things now. So education, I think it's all encompassing of between what you can do inside for yourself and what you can learn to help benefit others. And so it comes from like those anti-racism and resources, curating information like that we want to make public for everyone on our website, because we know this is a lot.
Yeah. And it's
not something that you can read once and sit down and be like, can get, at least like this is an ongoing, these are lifestyle changes that we want to help empower in our community and with our allies. So between self-care guides and also more of the specific anti-racist discrimination guides and how to be an ally and how to listen and learn and just and be supportive. These are things that we're trying to try and put out there and not as specific to, you know, stats, tale of the team. We have Google. People can do that.
Right. But no, that's cool, because it's giving guidelines and saying, hey, you can help us, but these are things that we need. So because I always caution people who want to help others to not come in with that savior's mentality of,
yes,
hey, I'm going to come help you, and I know what's best for you. It's like, well,
do you?
You know, exactly. You know, you might want to learn me first before you decide how you're going to help me and just put me in this space. So,
yeah. Cause I, you know, I'm sure this happened for you too, over the summer, especially after George Floyd and the BLM protests started ramping up. The amount of text messages and random voicemails I got, some of them very sincere, some from people I hadn't heard of in years.
Yeah.
Non-black people, and it's, some of it was great, you know, I appreciate it. I love my friends, you know, and that they thought of me and they wanted to check in on just how I was doing. But you're right, there is a very big difference in how to come at somebody.
Yes.
When it's something that's this emotional, because that savior mentality, that just miss me with that, you know, and it's very, you know, because that now it's counterproductive. Like now you didn't help. Now you just pissed me off.
<You know? laughs> Right.
But those that came very sincere and just like, hey, this is awful. I'm here with you. I support you. Call me when you need to talk. I'll just listen.
Just keep it simple.
Keep it simple. And, you know, and yeah, that's when those are the people that got calls back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the others were deleted.
Exactly. So that was a great bridge to the Get Uncomfortable campaign. Anything that makes people who oppress others uncomfortable about the way they just exist, I love it. Yeah. I love it. So what is the Get Uncomfortable campaign and how can we help make other people get uncomfortable?
It's something that we were so happy to launch it this last week, so it is still very, very fresh. And the BGHC, we want to put together this campaign as an initiative to disrupt racism on and off the ice and ultimately make hockey more welcoming for everyone because of all the things that we've already said. We recognize that there is a need here and nothing has changed. And we know no change comes comfortably. Change literally requires something, some mechanic, some activity, some behavior that is foreign, that is a foreign feeling, and that can be uncomfortable. And the conversation, what we've been going through hasn't been fun. So it's time to make everybody a little uncomfortable because the change that we need to create, it goes beyond us. It goes beyond Black women in the BIPOC community. Everyone has to be involved with our allies, you know? And we know these conversations, probably even why some of the hesitancy in some people to reach out to, you know, to Black people about that they know about what's going on. They might be like a lot of these messages I did get, they're like, oh, I wanted to reach out, but I didn't know how. I didn't know how to talk about this. I'm kind of uncomfortable. Like, it's for some people, these conversations are very, very awkward, right?
Yeah.
It's time to get uncomfortable. We need to do that. And it's going to be okay because you're not alone. This is shared. Right. We've been uncomfortable. So it's time if you want to help us make hockey welcoming for everybody, if you want to combat racism off the ice, on the ice in terms of even inclusion and how and who's represented in and who's in the media room and who's in the, the C-suites of these teams and franchises, then we need to roll up your sleeves. We need you to be with us, join us in this. And we will start to have these conversations and not just talk about it, but be about it. And I think that's key. And so there's a number of things that we have kind of in store that can't share yet, but we will. The main way that we can help or that people can get involved right now is to take our pledge and our pledge on our website. And you just go to blackgirlhockeyclub.org/getuncomfortable. You'll see the take the pledge button. Hit that pledge, let us know. And this is for not even just fans, but you know, we've seen a tremendous amount of positive response so far. I believe we have over 3,000 in the first 2-3 days of our launch. Like we just launched on Wednesday, and what is it, Sunday? So yeah, I have to check the numbers for today, but PK, everybody has been just awesome about this. And so we want everybody, you know, to know that it is uncomfortable, but you're not alone. This is a shared experience and that we're going to be, we need to do this. We need to get dirty a little bit and we need to make some change in disrupting racism in hockey.
Yes.
So taking the pledge, you can, you know, and it's fans, players, coaches, executives, whatever, it doesn't matter. This is an everybody thing, you know? So by taking the pledge, we'll follow up with everyone with steps and things that we're going to do. And there's certainly a lot of things that our committee has been working on and that we have in the works. But we certainly know that our primary objectives are in that range of we want to encourage the hockey community to be more welcoming to young Black girls and boys because of what we've spoken about. We want to make sure that the hockey community is employing and recruiting BIPOC Black people and applicants to diversify hockey off, you know, the ice and getting involved with the marketing media and executive levels of hockey. And we want to educate, you know, we want to make sure that our allies are guided in how to conversations because these awkward messages that we're getting, right? We want to invite, you know, anti-racism experts. We want to invite different players and fans and social justice advocates at all spaces and all shapes and sizes and colors to have conversations so that we can help create change. It's time we have to do things now. Everybody's been talking and reading all year. We've been talking. It's time to start doing. And that in and of itself will be a little uncomfortable for some people, because now we're like, time's up. Put your money where your mouth is. It's time to show up and act. And that's what we're all about with this campaign.
Well, I appreciate you saying it, wording it like that, because that kind of sums up like the last question I had. You answered it, because it was, how can we use sports to truly heal the racial scarring in America? But you just talked about it. It's those who, if you are truly an ally, be an ally, but talk to us first. I have a big problem with people who choose to fight for the community, but never go in and get to learn the community. You know, how does that even work? How in your mind can you feel like you're helping people that you feel you don't have to get to know?
I can't even begin to tell you the story. It's why I left LA. It's stupid. Right. It's literally stupid. I've seen teams, production teams that want to make, you know, campaigns and like, oh yeah, like we're going to make this movie about, about the criminalization of Black people like in this industry, and then not have nobody of color on the cast, and then have no, and then try and make some cinematic, beautiful masterpiece out of it, but with no call to action. And I'm like, who's funding this?
Right.
Really? So
right.
You guys are literally, y'all are getting paid to make this garbage? Like, so it's, but you're very, very right. This is definitely, I think, the strongest way that sports can be used off the field, off the court, off the ice to make some change, because that bridge has always been there. Sports and society. Yeah. Every game starts with a national anthem. Like, miss me with this stick to sports stuff. Like, come on. The Olympics? Come on.
We're
literally representing something much, much larger than us. That's why symbols, flags, colors mean something, right? This is certainly our way of helping, doing our part to serve Black women, Black girls, the Black community at large, to help make race, to help make hockey a little more inclusive. Because I've been called all kind of Black bitch and whatever, you know, and when I go to games and stuff, and I just want to have fun. That's how we started this conversation. Yeah. We want to be welcomed just like everybody else. Helping disrupt racism off the ice, much larger conversation, but it starts with curating the necessary people to help inform our allies on how to make this change. Because we can't suffer from the problem and then also be responsible for fixing it.
Right.
You can't rely on us to just do that. It's like, hey, we created racism. I know it sucks for you, but can you tell us how to fix it now? That we cannot rely, we can't bury that burden all on our own
anymore. I tell people all the time, let's think about, because I've done 10 years of sexual and domestic violence prevention. Mm-hmm. And nobody will ever tell the victim, well, stupid people will, but when people are trying to think about how to counter rape, how to end it, nobody says, hey, stop getting raped.
Yeah, don't worry about
it. The rapist have to stop raping. So the racist have to stop being racist.
Mm-hmm. I think a huge part of that too, people forgot what accountability is.
Right.
No one has accountability anymore, because racists feel like they can get away with things. Because especially now, more than ever, at least maybe not more than ever, but in contemporary history, that there is no ramifications for being a racist douchebag. It's almost encouraged
in
the current political climate.
You can become president.
You can become president. You can light tiki torches and burn down a Black church and be called a very fine individual.
Right. Right.
So now that lack of accountability, no one is seeing the punishment. No one's seeing the what if. No one's seeing the results. You can actually become president and be a racist prick. So at all levels, it's if we can help start to have conversations and making active change about, look, if you do this, then that. If that is significant enough, then maybe then that's the only thing I can think of right now that like will help make some sincere change. If you don't, and we see, you know, affirmative action, we see, but even in the NFL, like it's not working, Rooney Rule, like it's still not enough. So it's how can we make sincere change and force accountability on things? If we overhear some racist spouting stuff, then you're banned for life. You know, if you miss weight, we're going to take 90% of your perks instead of just 30. Like the consequences are not big enough to match the crime or the penalty.
Right. So right. It's
that those are the type of things that, you know, we that need to happen and that we want to be a part of in these conversations.
Exactly. Well, that's why we celebrate the existence of Black women, period. We celebrate the existence of Black women like yourself, and we celebrate the existence of the Black Girls Hockey Club, because for one, we do have to fight for ourselves. We have to stand up for ourselves, and we have to create spaces for ourselves. But we also have to let others know, as we've said repeatedly throughout this conversation, those who consider themselves allies, if you're going to be an ally, you're going to listen to us. You're not going to marginalize us. You're not just going to come up with your own ideas how you're going to help us. You're going to listen to us, or you're not going to be an ally. But we're going to put ourselves in the positions to win. Yes. And if you don't like it, fine. But we're going to put ourselves in positions to win, and we're going to help ourselves. We're going to help each other. We're going to help our community. You're and right. Black people are going to be able to thrive in any space that we're in.
We're here. Well, thank you for the support. Yeah, we need more of the fix. We need more.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate it.
The village.
So once again, and I'm trying to post the banner, but this thing, I don't know, it's not working right on my end. But say the website again.
BlackGirlHockeyClub.org. You can find all of our information there on the main page about our scholarship program. Next award for our winter scholarship is up. So December 31st is the deadline. So we can still, you know, accepting applications right now. And you can take the pledge for Get Uncomfortable. You can find that on our website as well. Just go BlackGirlHockeyClub.org/Get Uncomfortable. You can also find some merchandise there. All the money there, all of our proceeds go to the organization and funding these scholarships so that we can get, you know, more Black women on some skates and let them have some fun too. And also in supporting this campaign to get people to roll up their sleeves, get uncomfortable, and start making some change.
Right. And the link to the website is actually in the description of this video. So go click that link. Like, really go click that link. Go check the website out. You will definitely enjoy it. And how can people get in contact with you personally if they want to learn more about you or use some of your services?
Sure. It's TanishaSingleton.com, my website. That's the easiest way. I'm also pretty active on Twitter. So @TSingletonSays is my Twitter handle. DMs are open there. And then also, just by searching my full name in LinkedIn, you can find me there. But all of those links are on my website, like my social media. It is on TanishaSingleton.com. And I just launched my own podcast called I Have Questions, where we're having very similar discussions about fandom and the human experience in relation to media and technology. So, that's the I Have Questions podcast.
Check it out.
Yeah. And so all that's on Twitter and my website.
Okay. And I Have Questions podcast. You all check it out. And make sure you all like this video, share this video, comment on this video, so more people can see it, because that's how YouTube works. If you like, you comment and share, more people will see it, because we are working for us to make sure we take care of us. And when we see platforms such as the Black Girls Hockey Club and people such as Dr. Tanisha Singleton, we have to make sure that we support. So that's why we are here. I thank you. Like, this was great. I'm glad we were able to connect, and I'm glad that we had this conversation, and the quality of the conversation was excellent. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. I can't thank you enough. This is, these are the types of high quality conversations that, that make a difference. So right. I really appreciate it. This is what you're doing is top shelf. And I appreciate it.
We're definitely going to stay in touch. And I'll make sure I send you all the information, links and everything, so you can share it as well.
Absolutely. Will do.
All right. See you later. And everybody, we see you all next time.
Thank you.
No problem.